This is study number 28 in our camp meeting in Australia, Tananda 1992. Let us now continue to look at the organization of God's church. In our last study before this, we began to consider the responsibility that rests upon the church. That means on each individual, but more than this. In fact, when the church of God is united on a point, that church has a great authority in heaven. And so it should be considered on earth as well. Let us now turn to some statements in Acts of the Apostles and see what relationship there existed between Paul and the church of his time. We turn first to the chapter, the Gospel Message in Antioch in Acts of the Apostles. And there we read on page 163, God has made his church on earth a channel of light, and through it he communicates his purposes and his will. He does not give to one of his servants an experience independent of and contrary to the experience of the church itself. Neither does he give one man a knowledge of his will for the entire church, while the church, Christ's body, is left in darkness. Now we have studied in the message on gospel order that God reveals his will through one messenger. But we have also emphasized at that time, maybe you still remember this, that the movement of God is not a one-man movement. It is not where only one man is a worker, in other words, and all the rest are just listeners or nothing more. Now that picture you get a little bit when you come from the fallen churches. Why? Because there was a marked difference between laity and clergy, wasn't there? The clergy were supposed to preach and to think and act, and the laity were supposed to just listen and follow orders of the clergy. That was more or less the order. In other words, the church members were not having a great deal to do. It was more the clergy which was the working force of the churches. Now we don't have this difference at all. We don't have a clergy as such, because for this you need special institutions and so forth to bring forth the clergy, isn't it? Some schools and colleges and so forth. We don't have all this. Therefore, there has never been a difference between clergy and laity in our movement. Now the point is that in the Church of God, each worker, each member is a worker. Each one has a responsibility to fill. And this is very well illustrated by Paul in 1 Corinthians 12-14, where he describes the physical body. Now in the physical body we know very well that each member has a certain duty to do. There's not a member that has nothing to do. Some people think the appendix that is unnecessary, or the tonsils, we can cut them out if they give troubles. But in reality, all these things are really essential. If it was not so, God would have made a mistake in the creation of man, wouldn't he? Because everything that God has created in man has its place and its duty. We can't dispense with it, except at the cost of our perfect health. That is clear. So, likewise, in the church, every member has a certain function to fulfill, and without that member, the church suffers. That is the reason why when a person who had made a certain work goes away, the church suffers. Don't think that the church is not affected by it. It suffers, like the body suffers when a member is taken away. So, each member in the church has a certain duty. Now the picture that was presented by many who feared gospel order was that when God reveals his messages only through one man, then this man becomes one and everything in the church. He becomes the sole decider, the sole ruler, the sole everything. But is this so? Certainly not. First of all, everyone is a worker. Second of all, the messengership is only one office out of, or one institution, I should rather say. It's only one institution out of other institutions. The messenger is one part, and the United Church is another important institution. And likewise, we have also other workers. Now, let us see how Sister White here emphasizes the function of the church. And again, I want to read this. He does not give to one of his servants an experience independent of and contrary to the experience of the church itself. He does not give to one of his workers an experience independent and contrary of the church. Now that means if the church has a certain experience, let's say for example, we unanimously, do you say this like this? Are led by the Holy Spirit to think about a certain matter in a certain way, and one man, even if it was the messenger, would think totally different about the matter, who would have to submit to whom then? Well, the one man to the church. That is the rule here according to that statement, isn't it? Now, of course, that submission is not a blind submission. The one man who may make a different experience, he has freedom to present his thoughts to the church, and then he and they are praying about the matter. But in the end, a one man must be prepared to submit to the authority of the church. That is what the statement says. Again, he does not give to one of his servants an experience independent and contrary to the experience of the church itself. Now, because we have studied the messengership and emphasized it so much, and because we have also emphasized that the messenger is not set in by the church, nor can he be sacked, do you say this?
Disfellowship, sect.
In other words, they cannot say you are not the messenger anymore. That is a task that God has given to God. Because of this, some people have thought, one man can do what he wants and the church can do nothing about the matter. That's how it looks like, doesn't it? From the surface. So in other words, I come before you and say, I'm the treasurer now. That's my work. And you simply have to accept it. You can't do anything about it. Is this so? It's not quite like this. Now, it is true that God is the source. Let's look at this picture again. It is true that God is the source of everything. In other words, he must set the workers in his church. As it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, that he has set in the church first apostles, then teachers, miracle workers, helps, and all these kind of things. Let's read about this so that we have no doubts about this fact. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 28. There it says, and God hath set some in the church, first apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, governments, diversity of tongues. You know the text, do you? Very well. Yes, but the tongues that Paul is speaking of here, in particular, I think, would be that kind of tongue speaking he describes in 1 Corinthians 14. And that was not speaking in other languages. That was more speaking in the tongues of angels. And a language which normally a person does not understand except it is translated. And this is more for the edification of the person himself and for the church. Now that what they did in Pentecost, that was speaking in other languages. So there are two kind of tongue speaking described in the Bible, obviously. But it is one of the gifts of God, as described here. You come from the Pentecostal churches, don't you?
Must I?
Well, I had to in Poland because there were some people from the Pentecostal church with us. Now, first of all, let me tell you that we clearly see and understand that the tongue speaking in the fallen churches is not from God, but it is supernatural. That is obvious. So therefore, from which power must it be when it's not from the human power? It must be from Satan, very clearly. And we know that he counterfeits the real. So there must be a real. Now the real thing, that is described in 1 Corinthians 14, where Paul says if there is somebody speaking in tongues, he needs a translator so that it is for service for the church. If he has no translator, what benefit has the church? He rather should keep it for himself and speak at home in tongues. Now, why did God give this gift? to the people without translator? Well, obviously for his own edification. But so that the church has a blessing, everything should be done in order. There should be a translator, and they shouldn't. They should wait until it was their turn, until they were called upon. Yeah.
I don't find anything else, but it says here about being the tongues of angels. For instance, what tongue do the angels have to be recorded? Has it not been? It's a little understandable language. Who is that spoken to?
Yeah, it is true. Whenever the angels have talked with men, they have talked so that they could understand. There's no question about this. But Paul speaks in 1 Corinthians 14 of an interpreter, obviously, doesn't he?
Paul's practice.
That's right.
It's not yeah. Some
tongue. No, not in unintelligible. That not. That's clear. Well, anyway, let's not make... I may be wrong in this point. I thought it was rather obvious in the Bible, but maybe we can discuss this later again and
what
see.
What I'm saying, I don't believe it was in a tongue that is not used on earth.
I see. Yeah. Okay. That is not the special point now, so we just continue with the gifts now. So God has said in the church. Now, that text says God has said. Christ is God, of course, so we can say, okay. That is the same. I think we have no problems here, do we? God has said in the church. First of all, apostles, teachers, and so forth. Now, Sister White says God does not give one man an experience independent of others. That sounds like the church has set first apostles, then teachers, then prophets, doesn't it? Now who sets apostles, teachers, and so forth in the church? Does the church do this?
No.
Or does God do this?
No.
God. So when God does this, what role does the church play then? That is the question. Now that the church does... Or let's say so, the supposition that the church sets its workers. In other words, that the church is a democracy, that means that the people appoint their own workers. That supposition may be drawn from that statement, which I read in Acts of the Apostles, but it is not there. Let's read it very carefully again. It says here, God does not give to one of his servants an experience independent of and contrary to the experience of the church itself. Neither does he give one man a knowledge of his will for the entire church, while the church, Christ's body, is left in darkness. Now, does the statement say that the church has to appoint workers? Certainly not. But what does it say? The church must be in harmony with that appointment. In other words, if God gives an experience to a messenger and he appoints him, or to another worker and he appoints them to do a work in the church, then he gives him an experience. Does he give him this experience independent of the church? And does he leave the church in darkness about this appointment? Certainly not. So let us turn back to 1 Corinthians 12. Here we read, and God hath set some in the church, first apostles, secondary prophets, thirdly teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, governments, diversity of tongues. Now when God has said this, he does not do this independent of the church. That is the point. That is, he does not leave the church in darkness about this appointment. If he would, then the church would be an intelligent mass of people who just believe what a person tells them, but who have no special connection with God themselves. That would be very sad, wouldn't it? Now, would it be encouraging for a messenger or for a worker if he has to tell to the people, let's say the messenger now, if he has to tell the people, this is the message, and they all accept it just because he says so, would he be satisfied with that? He can't. It's like with children, if you tell them, now do this, and they just do it because you say it and for no other reason. Not because they love to do it. Not because they enjoy to do it and they intelligently cooperate with you, but simply only as unintelligent beings. No parent can be really happy with that, especially when the children are older. They want partners almost, don't they? As the children become older and older, they desire them to be their friends more than just their commandment receivers. Isn't this so? And so likewise, a worker could not be happy in the church if the church was totally left in darkness about what he says and they simply blindly follow him. That is not a desirable situation. I think we can see this very clearly. Now, however, there have been people who have viewed the office of the messenger a little bit like this, and then they thought, well, if the messenger acts like this, I can act like this too. And they have acted very independent of the church. I want to show this to you on page 164 for a moment. Or maybe we should go to 163. There it begins. There have ever been in the church those who are constantly inclined toward individual independence. In other words, they were totally unconcerned what the church thought about their actions. They were only concerned with what they believed was the right thing to do. They seem to be unable to realize that independence of spirit is liable to lead the human agent to have too much confidence in himself and to trust in his own judgment rather than to respect the counsel and highly esteem the judgment of his brethren, especially of those in the offices that God has appointed for the leadership of his people. God has invested his church with special authority and power, which no one can be justified in disregarding and despising, for he who does this despises the voice of God. It's a very, very strong statement. So not only what comes through the messenger is the voice of God, but also what the church believes is the voice of God. That was page 164. Again, God has invested his church with special authority and power, which no one can be justified in disregarding and despising. For he who does this despises the voice of God. Again, it says in the next paragraph, those who are inclined to regard their individual judgment as supreme are in grave peril. It is Satan's studied effort to separate such ones from those who are channels of light, through whom God has wrought to build up and extend his work in the earth, to neglect or despise those whom God has appointed to bear the responsibilities of leadership in connection with the advancement of the truth, is to reject the means that he has ordained for the help, encouragement, and strength of his people. For any worker in the Lord's cause to pass these by and to think that his light must come through no other channel than directly from God is to place himself in a position where he is liable to be deceived by the enemy and overthrown. The Lord in his wisdom has arranged that by means of the close relationship that should be maintained by all believers, Christian shall be united to Christian and church to church. Thus the human instrumentality will be enabled to cooperate with the divine. Every agency will be subordinate to the Holy Spirit, and all the believers will be united in an organized and well-directed effort to give to the world the glad tidings of the grace of God. So, that means, in practical terms, let's suppose the messenger would receive new lights, he would present it to the church, and the church would see no light in it. What would then happen? Would the messenger say, but it's light. What you say doesn't, I don't care about this because God has enlightened me and my source must come only from God. Would the messenger take such a stand? If he's the true messenger of God, certainly not. I tell you, the messenger, when he presents new light, is always very anxious to see how does the church react on this. And if he sees that the church rejoices in the light, that they really can see the point, it gives him a great relief and a great happiness, because that is the confirmation he's looking for as a second witness. True, the messenger receives his light directly from God, but he will be very careful to respect the voice of the church. And so he will not simply go forward and say, this is it. Now, why do we present this subject here? We present it because we need, as a church, and each one of us, need to understand that we bear a definite responsibility. We just can't afford to let ourselves hang and say, oh, the messenger will do it. We can't afford that. We personally bear a responsibility for the success or the failure of God's work, as much as the messenger does. Because as a church, we are invested with special authority by God, and we must be aware of this. It is a responsibility which we cannot withdraw ourselves from. Let us now turn to another chapter, and this we find, wait a moment, in the chapter Jew and Gentile on page 200 in the same book, Acts of the Apostles. Acts of the Apostles, page 200. It is the last page of the 19th chapter. There it says, Paul had dedicated himself and all his powers to the service of God. He had received the truths of the gospel direct from heaven, and throughout his ministry he maintained a vital connection with heavenly agencies. So Paul did not receive his truths through the church, but he received it direct from heaven. He had been taught by God regarding the binding of unnecessary burdens upon the Gentile Christians. Thus, when the Judaizing believers introduced into the church, into the Antioch church, the question of circumcision, Paul knew the mind of the Spirit of God concerning such teaching and took a firm and unyielding position, which brought to the churches freedom from Jewish rites and ceremonies. Notwithstanding the fact that Paul was personally taught by God, he had no strained ideas of individual responsibility. While looking to God for direct guidance, he was ever ready to recognize the authority vested in the body of believers, united in church fellowship. Now, while we are studying this, we should be aware of the fact that the Church of God can have authority, but it can also have no authority. Under what circumstances, let us think about this, does the church have authority, and under what circumstances does it not have authority? For example, the Catholic Church calls itself a church. Does that have authority which is recognized in heaven? Certainly not. You couldn't depend on the fact that the people there even understand the gospel. That is very clear. No question. That is an extreme case now. Under what circumstances would we have authority, under which would we have no authority? Would we have authority, for example, if we are totally disorderly? We're all running around in the room here. It reminds me, by the way, of my first experience as a young people leader. I got the responsibility of maybe 20 or 30 kids on a Sabbath afternoon, and I had to look after them and do something with them. And I had no experience whatsoever. So I stood there and more or less wondered what we would do. And they were running around, wild as they could. I was hopeless. I was really thinking, what can we do? Nothing. We could not do one sensible thing together. At that time, we still played games and so forth on the Sabbath. And I thought we'd play some games, but we even couldn't do this. They were too undisciplined. They were really running around. If we would do this here, would we have authority?
No.
Certainly not. But on the other hand, if we really would think alike about the subject, because on the basis that we truly understand the gospel and being enlightened by the gospel, we are truly unified in prayer and in thought and in purpose, and we have the same thought about the matter. Is this authority?
Yes.
Certainly. So the unification of God's church gives its authority. The unification in the truth, of course. Yes, that's right. Well, so let us specify this. It is the unified church when it is enlightened by the gospel. But I will read to you a statement to this effect soon. Let me first turn to Acts of the Apostles again. Finish that paragraph. Notwithstanding the fact that Paul was personally taught by God, he had no strained ideas of individual responsibility. While looking to God for direct guidance, he was ever ready to recognize the authority vested in the body of believers, united in church fellowship. He felt the need of counsel, and when matters of importance arose, he was glad to lay these before the church and to unite with the brethren in seeking God for wisdom and to make right decisions. Even the spirits of the prophets, he declared, are subject to the prophets, for God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. With Peter, he taught that all united in church capacity should be subject to one another. Now, being subject to one another, what does this mean? Now, when we talk of the authority of the church, very often the thinking of us goes in these channels. Aha, we must give more voice to our thinking. In other words, we must not always keep quiet, but immediately when we see something, we must cry forward. Stop. Now, if you would do this, while a message is developing and while a message is preached, how far would the preacher come with the truth? Not very far. Therefore, if we as believers have the true Spirit of God, what will we do? We will first listen very carefully, weigh the arguments with the truth of the Bible, and then we will, if it is wrong, show wherein it is wrong. And this careful approach to the matter shows also a respect to each other. That shows that we do not, I don't find the word, verachten. What is verachten?
Despise,
yeah. That we do not despise each other beforehand, but that we respect the other very carefully, even if that what he says seems to be a little bit strange in the beginning. We'll be very careful to finish his argument, let him finish his argument, and then we will set forth another view if this is not the right view. Now, when we deal with other in such a careful way, and if we are really subject to the Spirit of God, it is a very easy matter to come to a true, unified understanding of the truth. And then the Church of God has a very mighty voice. I wanted to read another statement to you. I collected together some statements which talk of the voice of God. Testimonies for the Church, Volume 3, page 450. There's a very interesting statement. Testimonies for the Church, Volume 3, page 450. And there we read, when Christ was upon the earth, there were men who had no respect or reverence for God's messengers and no more regard for their warning than for their own judgment. Also in this age of the world, there are those who do not respect the testimony of God's chosen servants so highly as their own opinions. Such cannot be benefited by the labors of God's servants, and time should not be lost in degrading the work of God to meet such minds. Christ said to the servants whom he sent forth, he that heareth you heareth me, and he that despiseth you despiseth me, and he that despiseth me despiseth him that sent me. Old English. Christ gives power to the voice of the church. Verily, I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever ye shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. No such thing is countenanced as one man's starting out upon his own individual responsibility and advocating what views he chooses irrespective of the judgment of the church. God has bestowed the highest power under heaven upon his church. It's a statement. God has bestowed the highest power under heaven upon his church. It is the voice of God in his united people in church capacity which is to be respected. So let us again summarize what is the duty of the church and what not. Now, the duty of the church is not to call workers. That is God's task. It is not to give individual guidance to individuals. That is God's personal work to each member. But the work of the church is to confirm the works that God has set in the church. That it is to confirm the truth that God reveals to the messenger. Or not to confirm when the church doesn't see truth in it, depending how it is. So the church has a definite responsibility in this respect. And as we understand this, we will individually be very careful to go ahead in harmony with the church. And at the same time, we will also see our own personal responsibility in this respect. I will tell you very quickly an experience of a brother in Germany, which he has made very lately. He Well, I'll tell you a little bit more details. He's a doctor, and for a long time he has went forward with his practice as a practitioner, thinking that he could somehow bring in agreement the message and his praxis. But he found after years, and especially after reading an article in the Messenger, that this was impossible. He could not give injections to the people and at the same time believe that God was the doctor. I mean, injections what they wanted. He was not taking the position that he gave drugs, but if the people came to him and wanted drugs, he gave them. And as a public doctor, he was also obliged to do this. He could not just do what he wanted. He came to the point to give up his praxis, which he did, and now slowly he was starting again, doing some very simple work. And I was phoning him and telling him to be a little bit cautious, not to start his old ways again, which he did. And you know what his reactions were? Not immediately, but after a while, he became very concerned and he said, I do not want to do anything which is in disagreement with the church. I believe that the Lord has led me so far, but he became very concerned about the matter. And I really liked that reaction because that shows that he is somebody who desires to be in harmony with the church. He does not consider his individual judgment as of more importance than that of the church. He does not say, the Lord has shown me this, so what you say doesn't concern me at all, or what the church says. No, he desires to be in harmony with the church. And for this reason, I really trust him that he will go the right way and that he goes the right way. I have no question about this. But if he would have answered me, well, you don't tell me what I have to do, I receive my instructions only from God, then I would have feared for him very much. And I would have needed to fear, wouldn't I? So from this little example, I wanted to show you what it means to be dependent on each other. In other words, we receive our orders from God. But once the church has a certain opinion about a thing, we should be very careful to regard it. Even Paul did this. Even Paul, who was personally taught by God. How much more we? Isn't this so? Let's read this statement again on page 200 in Acts of the Apostles. Notwithstanding the fact that Paul was personally taught by God, he had no strained ideas of individual responsibility. While looking to God for direct guidance, he was ever ready to recognize the authority vested in the body of believers united in church fellowship. He felt the need of counsel, and when matters of importance arose, he was glad to lay these before the church and to unite with his brethren in seeking God for wisdom and to make right decisions. Now, what does it... One, did he accept the authority of the church? It says, the authority vested in the body of believers united in church fellowship. So again, if it was not a united body, there would not be much authority. But the body of believers united in church fellowship. And the same thing we read here in the Testimonies, volume 3, page 450 and following, where it said, no such thing is countenanced as one man starting out upon his own individual responsibility and advocating that what views he chooses, irrespective of the judgment of the church, God has bestowed the highest power under heaven upon his church. It is the voice of God in his united people in church capacity, which is to be respected. What voice is to be respected? In his united people in church capacity. Here on the camp meeting, for example, we are in church capacity. And as we are united on the truth, there's a mighty authority going out. Now, if somebody would not see light, a single person, he would have to test himself very clearly. If all the rest see light in it, wouldn't he? Very carefully. And that is a responsibility that is a great protection for us. A great protection. And it will also will lead the church to become truly united and to see its responsibility. So mainly, we can call the function of the church a second witness or a confirmation of revelations the Lord gives to the messenger or to individuals. And this confirmation is a very mighty and weighty matter. It needs to be understood and respect it. Now, when we present this, mostly there comes up the fear, oh, how shall we know? How shall we know? Shall we make votings so that we know what the will of the church is and count so many for, so many against? So that is the will of the church. Is this how it works? Certainly not. If it was, the church was not truly united, was it? Then maybe 49% would be against and 51 for. That is not unification of the church. So what we need is an agreement that is very easily seen by the spiritual minded person, which is not so easily seen by the person who is accustomed to count. Because we never count votes, do we? But at the same time, we cannot expect that always 100% everybody agrees. Because there will always be those amongst us who have their own individual judgment and place this above what God reveals through His church. They have been in the past, haven't they? We know these people, they have gone away from us. And so we can expect that there will be such people among us till the end of time. In fact, Sister White says so. There will be those among us who want to bind the Word of God to their narrow ideas till the very time. That we have to expect. So, how can we know then that these people are not the voice of the church? Usually it is seen very easily and very soon when when a message is presented and the people cannot agree with the message anymore. Those people who place their individual judgment above the voice of the church, it will be seen very soon that they are not in agreement with the message. Maybe it has been seen already before it, or it will be seen thereafter. That is the experience we have always made. In other words, when the church is united on a point, then there's no real problem. I talk now of those who really understand the message, who really are grounded in it, and who have an intelligent understanding of it. Now, another point. What was the last point I wanted to mention? I forgot it now. It slipped out of my mind. So I think the point is very clear now. The church, united in church fellowship, has real authority, and it must be our endeavor to come to this unity. Oh yeah, that was the last point I wanted to mention. It is not very important to come to a church agreement over a point. There's not a great ceremony that has to be followed or pursued like the voting ceremony in order to find out what the will of the church is. Often, God's leadings are through necessity, as we have read today. Can you remember that statement? I have it in my room. Put it here. Often God's leadings are through necessity. In other words, the practical works that God gives in the church and the persons He chooses for the practical works are mostly very obvious. And after a time of testing, the church will wholeheartedly agree on a certain calling of a certain person to a certain job. Things like this are not very difficult to see. It is a little bit more difficult to understand the calling of a messenger. It has to be carefully tested if he is not an established messenger already. But again, it is not too difficult, because once we receive a powerful message through a messenger and we are enlightened upon it and we know it is from God, we know that is the messenger. It's very simple, isn't it? So we know him by the message that he preaches. And the message that he preaches gives us experiences. And that is the important point. Well, our time is really over, and I didn't want to spend too much time on that subject. It was more or less one important thought to which we need to become aware. Maybe the Lord wants to show us more of this in future. But I will close this now for the moment.